You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast, episode number 62. What? Yeah, no real significance. It's the first time I've actually checked before we started recording. Anywho, our number one for the week is Faster Than Light by Brian Haberlin on Image Comics. And our over-under for the week is Types of Food. This was my pick, if you couldn't tell. Yeah, I'm your host. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I'm here with Brian, who you can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. Chris is once again absent because of the whole laptop issue I explained last week. And let's do it up.
Do it. Transmitter circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
All right, so you had asked me right before we really started recording here about whether or not I have read Archie number 3, and I did, so I'm assuming you did as well.
I did.
This is killing it.
It's pretty good.
I am totally digging, and I know we kind of push a lot of the Archie stuff on this show. I don't know if it's because we grew up with it or if it really is that awesome, but I think it's really all that awesome. And the new stuff, and, you know, this is not the stuff you're going to find with the Life with Archie stuff. This is a whole new, brand new thing if you weren't aware. They're on issue number 3. It is super good. It's more of a modern Archie. Cell yeah. phones and whatnot.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know if you want to get too deep into how they're reintroducing all these characters.
That's fine by me, because I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, Jughead's not quite the goofball he was. And Betty... It starts out with Betty and Archie they have just broken up, and Veronica moves into town. This time around, Veronica is a rich girl / former reality TV star who gets thrown into this public high school, and rather than her fighting Betty over Archie, she's essentially, at least at this point, using him as her...
lapdog?
Yeah, pretty much a lapdog, and he's, you know, trying his hardest to impress her and so forth, and she's taking full advantage of his, you know, idol worship, more or less.
Here's the few things I like. Archie's still as clumsy as always, which he always was in the old, you know, strips from back in the day, but like you said, Jughead's not a big goof anymore. He still wears the hat. I forget exactly the reason behind it, but in this series, he's more of more mature. And his family is loaded. They're like the rich people in town or whatever. So he doesn't have to, you know, he's just a lot calmer, a lot smoother, I guess would be a way to put it.
He's a little more metrosexual, I guess, or chiseled.
Yeah.
Channing Tatum-esque.
Still wearing the hat, though, which is kind of neat. Benny's pretty much the same, along with Archie. But like you said, Veronica's the new girl in town. And, you know, she's like, oh, I bet I can get used to your pedestrian food. You know, she takes a bite of Sloppy Joe and just throws up all over herself. And she just calmly gets up and walks out. And next thing you know, a couple pages later, she's like crying in the bathroom. Like, how could you do this to me? This is the worst. You know, and it's just, I think, more realistic to the times where, you know, people try so hard to fit in. But inside, they're all so just freaking out in their own minds about fitting in that, you know, everyone cries in the bathroom every now and then, I guess.
She's Kim Kardashian in this book.
Oh, yeah. They've even likened her. You know, Jughead's made references to, you know, her being a Kardashian or whatever, which, again, brings it into the times. And I think they're doing a great job of updating Archie and the gang, I guess would be the way to put it.
Speaking of updating, Chip Zdarsky's Jughead number 1 comes out yesterday, actually.
Oh.
Or this past week. Saying, what?
Nailed it?
Yeah.
What? All right, yeah, that's...
We're in a time vacuum.
Interesting enough.
Deal with it.
Well, everyone knows we record a few days early. It's no secret.
All right, then it came out yesterday.
Other than that, I don't think I really, you know... I just plowing through some of the standards of my prescription, or my you know, subscription box, and nothing really jumping.
I got two things that are jumping.
Uh-oh.
Yep. I mentioned it last week, and it wasn't a terribly long read. Daredevil Noir. It's one of the Marvel character noir books. There's the X-Men and
Spider-Man.
Luke Cage, Spider-Man.
Iron Man.
Punisher, Iron Man.
Pretty much all of them.
They didn't do like Hulk Noir or Black Widow.
That
noir.
Would be amazing.
That'd be weird.
The Hulk with like a big trench coat.
I was thinking now.
Solving crimes.
Well, that's the thing. This Daredevil Noir set during Prohibition.
So is the Spider-Man one.
And rather than Daredevil and Foggy being law partners, in this one, Foggy Nelson is still Matt Murdock's best friend, but he's a PI. And Matt Murdock is a vaudevillian acrobat.
Mm-hmm. But he's still blind?
Oh, yeah. He's still blind. And, yeah, he's a vaudevillian acrobat / stuntman by day. And Daredevil by night. His costume, a little bit weirder in this one. He's running around in a tank top with jeans, I think. But beyond some of the weird changes that they make, for a 4-issue miniseries, I mean, this was pretty much exactly what I wanted. It's in the Brubaker vein. A little light on the dialogue, but the dialogue that's there is really excellent. And it's this, I mean, it's the, for lack of better phrasing, it's the color by numbers femme fatale with the twist story, but it's just perfectly good. I love it. It's my second foray into the Marvel noir series. I read the Punisher one. That one was just okay. This one, far better. And we'll see if the other ones hold up as well, but. Also, the other thing I have to mention, Volume 2 of Alex and Ada, volumes issues 6 through 10, I guess, are in this collected edition. I loved the first one, but I really love the second one.
You don't have to tell. I read the singles, dude.
I've been saying for months now, until I whittle this pile of trades down, I think I'm going to take a break from buying. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. I think I'm going to have to get Volume 3 immediately and finish. Because to start, this one picks up right after she becomes sentient, and it ends right when... I don't want to ruin it. Something happens between the two of them. You could kind of use your imagination, but the way they get there, it's just done in a really... It's done in a really thoughtful way, and... The book has this really weird tendency to use background characters in an interesting way. Characters that don't even really play into the story at all. In addition to the dialogue, it's just fantastic. And I think that actually Sarah Vaughan, the girl who works on the book with Jonathan Luna, is actually the creator of the story. I think he's kind of assisting her. Because when I was looking through the credits, I'm like, oh, she came up with the characters and the story. He just kind of helped the script along. I think he probably just... Because it said this is her first book. I'm thinking he used his clout to go to Image and go, hey, I got this friend. She's really talented. Check out her story. Why don't we do it?
That'd be, like, seriously, I'm sure he helped, you know, write it a little bit. Maybe.
No, it said he was a script assistant or something.
Yeah,
like
so,
that.
You know, she handed in the stuff and he was basically just an editor. If that's the case, she is killing it, and I can't wait to read more of her stuff.
Oh, I know.
It is by far... One of my favorite books of the year,
we've ranted about it multiple times.
Yeah, well, I've actually finished it.
I finished volume 2 last night. Well, I started buying the trades. I'm not going to start buying.
No, some. I know.
But I cannot stress enough. If you see Alex and Ada volume 1, 2, or 3, I'm assuming at some point they'll come out with an omnibus. However, you decide to buy it, just buy it. It's really good. It's really one of Image's best books at the moment, or in the last couple of years.
I have the singles, and I'm betting they'll probably put out like a fancy hardcover in the future. I will be getting, oh my god, I forgot I have that Southern Bastards hardcover on hold at ANF. Looks like I gotta spend some money tomorrow. What?
Tomorrow.
Saturday, whatever. I forgot about that until I just said hardcover. Anyway, sorry, off track.
So, yeah, I don't know if and when they're going to do that omnibus thing, if at all. But if they do, buy that. If not, buy the soft covers. If you feel really into it, buy all 15 singles. But buy it, because it's really good. Actually, better than really good. Just really, really...
Just Nike, man. Just do it.
Yeah, it's McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Okay, so the number one for the week was Faster Than Light by Brian Haberlin and Gerard Van Dyke on Image Comics. This just kind of happenstance came to be the number one because, you know, we couldn't get Chris on and it was technically his pick. But I had bought this because I was checking it out anyway, so we figured we would just go with this. And it's basically, you know, it starts out where they're interviewing this scientist who created the formula to allow travel faster than light. You know, at this point in the story, we have been able to travel. I believe they made reference to, you know, it takes a couple of weeks to get to Mars, where now it'll only take a couple hours with this faster than light technology. And they're gearing up this ship with a whole new captain to go out and explore and find new technologies to fight this supposed enemy that they kind of flashed in a panel or two saying, we need to find a way to beat him. So go out there, find allies, find technology, blah, blah, blah. The rest of the story is all filled with, it's a bunch of old technology with new technology thrown on top of it. We don't know if it's going to work. We should be testing this for another few months before we launch tomorrow. Oh, my God. And I feel like that's about it. Like, they... I know this is... It's rough with a number one to... I guess you don't want to give away too much of what the story's going, but I feel like if you don't have that hook, you're not going to really go anywhere. And I feel like they wasted so much time just explaining that, you know, the new captain who took over, but the second in command is the old captain of the ship. And, you know, she trusts herself and her crew, but she don't trust him and his crew. And we're launching tomorrow and old technology, and it's buried under new technology. We don't know if it's going to work. I feel like they just ranted on about some of the same things over and over. And I feel they could have gotten more out. Because at the end of the book, they landed on a planet that they found through some hologram that they were able to do with this faster-than-light technology of the solar system. They found a new planet that nobody's ever seen. They stopped there, and it's like, ooh, we might want to investigate this. And then you see something, like, slither off in the background, and it's like, and it ends. I'm like, I feel like you could have done a lot more with the first issue. Is it just me?
Well... First of all, the planet they go to is called Ouroboros. I forget what Ouroboros means, new beginnings or something along those lines. It's a planet, or they bounce back and forth between calling it a planet and a planetoid, that has drifted from seemingly unknown space into our solar system, and they are saying it's already come in as far as Venus, I believe. And they're saying this planet just continues to move closer towards the sun. And they're tracking how fast it's coming. And they're like, at this rate, it's going to be near Earth in, you know, X amount of time. So they're both fascinated and concerned. So they send this crew, which is, you know, bouncing back and forth between Earth, this space station, and Mars, and back and forth, and so on and so forth. And now they've got this faster-than-light technology retrofitted onto this old ship, so they decide to send that ship out to Ouroboros to investigate. Yeah. I feel like this is a really good idea, but I'm not sure that the initial execution pays off in any sort of... I guess, in a way, it's kind of presumptuous to... expect some big hook. It's like, oh, if you don't, you know, show me some crazy monster by page 5, then I'm out of here. But at the same time, you're right, they do spend a lot of time just, well, I was captain first, well, now you're the captain, well, what if I die, then you'll be captain. It's like, what?
I feel like they referenced the whole new technology thrown on top of old technology at least three times.
Well, here's the thing, too. If you read the back cover, it goes through the whole synopsis about Saul Fredericks, who is the guy who's not an astronaut, but he discovers this faster-than-light technology and sells it to whatever, you know, space exploration companies or corporations that are going out into space. They never say NASA, so I'm guessing it's more like, you know, Elon Musk type situations. Just guessing. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of the book, they spend time bickering and discussing and arguing what to do when they get to Ouroboros, whether they go or not. There's a Russian guy who's, I think his name is Vlad, which is, you know, standard Russian dude name. And his thing is go there, land, and pretty much just look around and then leave. Don't spend time doing your science stuff, is what he says.
Yeah.
It just feels like there's... I felt like I was reading an episode of Space 1999. If you've ever seen that show, it was from the 70s. It was like Star Trek minus the action, which sounds weird because Star Trek was a lot of, you know, analytical what-if scenarios and not a lot of pew, pew, pew. Not that there's anything wrong. I actually enjoy Star Trek quite a bit. But this is like take Star Trek and strip away a lot of the fun, at least this first issue. But I love the idea. The idea of this phantom planet entering our solar system and it's moving on its own axis almost. Like it's not, you know, falling into any sort of rotation or any sort of...
I
want to
say that they were saying that the orbit of it...
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Where it's at its farthest point, it's out farther past, you know, past Pluto, but on its when it comes in, it comes as close to Venus as, say, Venus does. So it's just on a really weird orbit, is what I took out of it.
But they made it sound like it's coming closer and closer, and it's not on any sort of strict orbit. Like, the orbit's pretty elastic, is kind of what I took from it, and maybe I read that wrong. But again, it gets so much into the bickering and the planning and the arguing and the, you know, setting up the rankings that it's kind of like...
Wasted pages, I feel. That's all. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about what they did find on the planet. Like I said, something did slither away. But, I mean, that's not all they found as soon as they walked off their ship. But, I'm, you know, like I said, I'm not going to ruin it just in case people do want to read it. And, you know, I'm a big fan of sci-fi, science, space in general, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like, you know, if you're watching a movie, this is the part that's dragging, I feel. You know, and I feel like that's just not a good way to start a story.
Well, I was going to say, if this was a standalone graphic novel, it probably would have been fine. But when you're working from issue to issue, I do feel like, yes. This is the part of the movie, and the first time through, we were like, is something going to happen? But then as the movie progresses and you learn more information, then it's like all the stuff in the beginning pays off more as the movie goes forward.
Right.
Which is probably what's going to end up happening here. But right now, just reading one issue and having nothing to go forward with, you're felt kind of like, well, okay, that was 20 minutes of I have no idea. I don't know. Like I said, the idea is pretty... It's been done before, but I like it for some reason. It's been done before, but the Phantom Planet thing adds a layer of intrigue, which I'm interested in. But because there was nothing to really pull you in at all until the very last couple of panels, I almost feel like it's going to be like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where you watch the pilot and it was just good enough, and then you watch the second episode and you're like hoping it was going to build on what they left you with in the first episode and it didn't. Then you go to the third episode and it still doesn't, and then you're like 5-6 episodes in and you're like, is anything going to ever pay off on this show, or is all this going to be like episode to episode, and or as they refer to as Freak of the Week? It's a little bit different, but still, like, I think, like I said, I had like such high expectations for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I've heard it's gotten a lot better, but I feel like the same way. Like, I feel like if I go and buy the second issue, I'm going to be like, all right, maybe the third one is the one that gets really good.
I actually think because of the way they left it, that the second one will actually hopefully pay off a lot more. Only because they pretty much hinted right at something's about to pretty much happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, I could be wrong. But I just feel they could have done more with the first issue. But that's fine. We can number it and move on.
Yeah.
And not to say, I mean, I'm probably going to check out the next one. But as a standalone first issue, I'm just kind of like, it was all right. I'll give it a 5.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the artwork's really good. The story has intriguing aspects, but it's a little too space 1999. A little bit too much, I don't know. It feels like I'm in a... A lot of it felt like I was in a conference room discussing, well, the documents say this, and they're supposed to say that, and what are we going to do going forward? How are we going to get this invoice number over here? Like, I was like, I can go to work for that. I don't need to read that in a comic book.
Right, yeah.
So I'm at a 5. It was... I love the concept, but I just don't know that the execution's there, at least not yet.
Yeah.
This is one of those things that maybe it gets better, and then... when you read it as a whole, you're like, oh, no, stick with it because it pays off.
Yeah.
And maybe it does. It has potential to do that. I just don't know that the first issue has, like you said, that hook.
All right. So next on the agenda, I don't know if there's anyone out there who's, you know, fans of the, like, Rock Band, Guitar Hero style of video games, but a certain nerd who hosts a certain podcast that you're kind of listening to right now, used to be really awesome at those games and, you know, really into those games to the point where I've entered plenty of contests.
He has the guitar to prove it. I'm not even joking.
I did. I won a real guitar that was turned into a Guitar Hero guitar by winning a Guitar Hero contest sponsored by Coors Light. If I can dig up the pictures, I'll even post them on our good old Facebook. Wow. And, you know, when we did the Rock Band tournaments for a while there, we had the full band. You know, my sister was the singer. Mike and Tony were guitar and bass. And then I was on the drums. And we got to the final, second to final round at Hollywood Casino in Indiana, like a couple of dorks. God, I can't believe I'm admitting all this. But anywho, there is a new one coming out after a very, very long hiatus. And the one thing that, with all the songs that they have added to those games over the years, there was, you know, there was always those couple of songs that you just never got, that you always wanted. And some nerds out there figured out how to program it themselves, but I was never that good at that.
Well, there were always songs that came with the base game that I would look at and go, whose idea was this?
Yeah.
Perfect example, Sabotage by the Beastie Boys. Whatever, you like that song, you don't like, I personally think that song's terrible. But if you like that song, fine, but it's not really, it's a rap song with some sampling and maybe like a guitar lick, but there's no band involved. So how is that transfer over to Rock Band? There were even songs that I didn't generally like, but they were fun to play because they, you know, gave you the fretwork to keep it challenging.
Right.
Like, okay, perfect example. I hate Bon Jovi. I've never liked Bon Jovi in my life. But there was a Bon Jovi song that you pretty much had to play in the base game of Rock Band 1. And at least the fingering was interesting enough to keep the song challenging, which was enough for me to not cry completely, even though I hate that song.
Another one of my major problems with this game was, and it's a Rock Band, it wasn't a Guitar Hero thing, I'm pretty sure, they put Disturbed on there. What was that stupid song? Down with the Sickness? Probably, you could teach, a 2-year-old how to play that song. Even if you don't know how to play it, you can figure it out in about 4 seconds and then teach it to a 2-year-old. That's how simple it is. And they made that so ridiculously stupid on Rock Band. It's like, how is it that I can 5-star, gold star, you know, like Mastodon, but, you know, Disturbed, I'm fumbling my way through it. Like, what is wrong with you?
The other Disturbed song that was on Guitar Hero, I nailed a bunch of times, though.
I don't know. I feel like that band just shouldn't exist. I'm sorry.
No,
you'll
get no argument from me. I saw them twice. Once they opened for Danzig, I had no idea who they were. And I remember going, these guys are never going to succeed. And then I was absolutely wrong. And another time was when we went to that stupid Rockstar festival and they got sandwiched in between Mastodon, Dragon Force, and Slipknot. And we're like, I guess we're going to have to sit through Disturbed. And oh my God, it was sitting through a band, if there ever was such a thing.
I've never seen a band on stage move so little in my life and look like, yeah, we're here for the paycheck. We're not having fun whatsoever. Like, it is unbelievable how just terrible they are as people, let alone
as people. They might be like the most generous,
I don't care,
thrifty, you know, good-hearted human beings alive. You don't know, but
I don't think so.
Musically, they're just not my thing at all.
I mean, that was kind of a little Disturbed rant. Sorry.
Yeah,
so what we figured we would do is pick a couple of songs that we would like to see that we know probably will never make it on there. Number three on my end, and this is really no like particular order, like this, you know, but this is just, you know. And now that I'm thinking about
mine is,
it, there's a lot more. Like, I could probably do a list of 20, but these were just the first three that came to mind, because I thought they'd be fun to do in a rock band setting. First, and it's weird because there's no guitar in it or bass. It's keyboard and drums. Zombie, Surface to Air, because that song is super tough. And I feel like it'd be so much fun to play on the drums. And I think maybe it was Guitar Hero or maybe it was Rock Band, but one of them did come out with a keyboard.
You could actually just
do it on a bass.
You could do the bass, but then also do the keyboard parts as like a guitar synth.
Yeah. I mean, it can be, they did it for other songs. They could do it with this one, but that song's super tough.
I would have picked Legacy, but that's just me.
Well, I could pick probably a handful of zombie songs, but that's like one of my top favorites. Through Time is another disgustingly good song.
There's a song on the last album, not the new one. The new album, I think, comes out like next week or the week after. But the last album they did, Oscillations, I believe it's
something
called.
Something like that, yeah.
That song just, oh, I love it. My number three, and I could have picked any song from this band, but I had a feeling you might pick one. And especially now. But I picked Body and Blood by Ghost. I think that'd just be a good kind of laid-back song. Actually, if it were up to me, just put their entire discography, including their covers.
It took me a minute to figure out which one of their songs I was going to put on there, or I changed it at the last minute.
I ran through like 10 of them. Like, no, that one. No, not, no, that one. No, no, to that one. And then I just said, you know what song I just liked listening to more than any song of theirs? And it's that one, because it's just, it's laid back. It's got that Blue Oyster Cult vibe, and it's just super creepy. I love that song.
Well, keeping in the spirit of Ghost, initially I was thinking Genesis, because that song is just awesome. But I figured I'd go with something that has lyrics. I went with the only song I wanted that they didn't play when we saw them, and that's Secular Haze, because I just love that song.
Yeah.
The whole waltzy, like, just creepiness of it is just awesome.
See, I was thinking like Spirit or from the Pinnacle to the Pit, because of all the like quirky guitar stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you could just pretty much put their entire discography
up
there.
I was almost going to put the cover, If You Have Ghosts, You Have Everything.
Oh, that's not even their song. It's a great song. Truthfully, I never would have even known that song existed until they did it.
Yeah, neither did I. I looked it up.
I've heard of Rocky Erickson, but I never listened to him until I heard that song. I'm like, man, that song is amazing. I got to listen to Rocky Erickson. From what I remember, it's been a while, but I don't think I liked Rocky Erickson quite as much as I liked their version of his song. I will say this. They covered I'm a Marionette by ABBA, and I went and listened to ABBA's version. Totally different. Still kind of an awesome song, though.
Neat.
It's very operatic.
Is that your number two?
Oh, no. My number two is off the last album by Witchcraft, and if anyone that knows them or anyone in that band happens to hear this, please put out another record, because it's been like 3 years now. But there's a song off of their last album called Legend. And if you've not heard Witchcraft, you need to go on Spotify or YouTube or just order the record right now, because they are just one of the best retro metal bands probably the last decade. The song White Light Suicide has probably the heaviest guitar breakdown ever. It just, every time I hear it, I want to like drive my car off a bridge. It's so good, which sounds weird because then I'd never hear it again. But if I had that on Rock Band, I would do like the total Glenn Tipton crouch and like, you know, the total metal pose to that song. I'll put it on Instagram if you really want to see it. Just tweet me, you know.
Number one for me, and this is just going to, because I think it would be super fun to play on that game. Boom. Milk Leg, Intronaut.
Yes.
I would probably play that song all day until I passed it on Expert on Drums. And I don't know if I could do it, but I passed Panic Attack on Dream Theater, so boom, I could do Milk Leg.
I crush that song on drums in the car all the time.
I still screw up in the car, but
like, I mean, in my head, I get it. But then like, I've tried to play it like on actual drums. I'm like, nope, wait, no, got it. No, I lost it again. Nope, well.
Yeah.
Well, mine's actually in the same vein, and I actually have a few more additions I would add if we had time, but I'm going to just stick to this one, because I'll just preface it by saying my introduction to the band King Crimson was 21st Century Schizoid Man. That was the song that instantly made me a fan of King Crimson, and since then I've bought probably 6 or 8 of their albums. I've heard almost everything they've ever done, every weird era of that band, and to me, only one band has come up with a song that matches the quirkiness and grand scale of musicianship of that song, and that's Mastodon, The Last Baron. When I heard that, when I heard Crack the Sky, I was like, this might be the best album of the decade. And I stand by that to this day. It's their best album in my eyes. But no band, in my opinion, has ever done their... Like, you always say, we'll always say, like, oh, this album is that band's Rain and Blood, or this song is that band's Stairway to Heaven, whatever. To me, 21st Century Schizoid Man, completely... It was as crucial to changing music as, say, the first Black Sabbath album, or Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin. It doesn't get the recognition, obviously, because King Crimson's more of a artsy kind of band. But The Last Baron by King or Mastodon, it has that melodic, you know, kind of spacey beginning, and then the breakdown, and then the super heavy, just crazy time signatures, time changes all over the place. With the and actually, if you listen to 21st Century Schizoid Man, in the middle of the instrumental part, it's got the and Mastodon does their own.
How's that go?
You'd have to hear it. It's kind of like this Emerson, Lake and Palmer circusy, just kooky, super proggy technical mania. It's like 12 minutes of just pure musical mastery. Probably the best song of the early 2000s. And it's about Rasputin, so Scott should like it.
I'm not going to lie. I honestly spaced out about 10 minutes ago into your little rant there.
All right, well, I'll end
it. I was reading the whole Jesse Eisenberg thing.
All right, well, I'll leave it there then. No, whatever.
Nailed it. Okay, so...
Did you pick your number one?
Yeah, Intronaut.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, ooh. So if anyone else has top three songs they've always wanted on that game, tweet us. Let us know. What's so special about this Jesse Eisenberg's little comment of he was never too excited to stop smiling? Outside of the fact that he basically what he said was, this movie is what pretty much gave him his first introduction to comic books, which he figures was a good thing, because not being the comic book fan that, you know, basically saying that he wouldn't be too excited to do his job over the sheer fact that he's playing Lex Luthor. But because he doesn't have that connection to comics, that he feels he was able to do his job better.
Okay.
I don't know. You put the story up.
It was an excuse to recast the movie.
I know. I was getting there. I just thought there might be something you wanted to say.
Well, part of it was because when they were first talking about this film, and actually I think it goes far back as Man of Steel, there were other actors rumored to be playing Lex Luthor. Some of whom, when I heard the name, I was like, yes, perfect, do that. And then when they announced Jesse Eisenberg, like many comic book fans do, there was a few people who were like, huh, interesting choice. And there were a lot of people who were like, no, you're ruining everything. So I think between the initial like kind of mixed to bad reaction to his casting combined with him making some pretty derogatory comments about San Diego Comic-Con, which people took the wrong way. I got what he was saying. And it has more to do with his not being comfortable with large audiences and public spectacle. He's kind of a private guy, which I totally appreciate.
Right, yeah.
And then this, I just feel like the little bit I've seen of him as Lex Luthor, I think is going to be super interesting and a totally different take on that character. Because I'm used to the Lex Luthor in the suit with the bald head and the very stern and serious. And this is Jesse Eisenberg being a little bit more like, woo, like weird and kind of the rich recluse kind of character. So I just thought, well, a lot of people don't seem to be sold on him as Lex Luthor. A lot of people were not sold on Ben Affleck as Batman. So if we were going to make this movie and we were going to cast it based on whoever we wanted from the beginning of cinema to now, who would we put in these main roles?
Well, see, I just picked current. I didn't think about going old.
I went old on a couple of
them. But I will say, now, I don't know why I thought of this, but you mentioned Comic-Cons, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, you know, when this guy here becomes a million, gajillionaire actor, and I start going to Comic-Cons, I'm not going to make people pay $50 to shake my hand and get a photo. I'll be giving that stuff away for free.
$45.
No. I'll bring
$42.99.
boxes of photos that I will give my fans, because if it wasn't for them, you would be nothing. Remember that.
Some of these actors, like Todd Bridges, need the money.
Yeah, he doesn't count. No one's paying $50 to meet Todd Bridges. They like flip him a quarter and he likes, oh, thank you. Have a picture.
You want a box?
Right. Anywho, okay. So we're recasting, and I think that was awesome right in the microphone. I'm going to snort. I don't think people are really going to like some of my choices either, but I don't care because it's my movie now, so
right.
Taking yeah. over. I want to know who your Batman is first, because mine, you're going to be like, who's that?
My Batman was actually bandied about as a possible Superman. I'll just go right out and say it. A, I'm okay with Ben Affleck being Batman, and B, I think he's going to absolutely own the role when he's done with it. It's going to be one of those things where he's going to be revered as Batman. However, if it was up to me and Ben Affleck never got mentioned, I would have picked John Hamm.
Ooh, interesting.
He's tall. He's very, you know, women love him. He's got just enough gristle on the face to look a little haggard, but just a little bit of gray because he's in his early 40s. But he's not, like, super muscular, but he's not me. So I just think, like, I don't think he would have wanted to do it, but I think he would have been pitch perfect as Bruce Wayne.
See,
I actually think Ben Affleck's going to be better as Batman, and I actually think Ben Affleck's going to be good as Bruce Wayne as well, but I think John Hamm is the quintessential, he was born of this world to be Bruce Wayne.
I can see it. Knowing that in this movie, Batman is, you know, he's older.
John Hamm.
I went a lot older than John Hamm, I think.
Charles Bronson.
Right. No, never mind. Again, you're going to be like, huh? Enrique Castillo. Boom.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
Blood In, Blood Out. He was Montana.
I haven't watched that movie in so long, I can't even remember who that is.
He was the leader of La Unda in prison. The guy with the goatee. The guy was like, we got to be better than this.
What? Are you kidding me?
You don't think... Obviously, you've never seen him in anything else, but...
No.
You
know, Well, I think I may have.
Yeah. I think he'd be...
I think that what's-his-name would have been a better Bruce Wayne than that guy.
Who?
The guy who becomes cellmates with Miklo at the end.
No way!
What's his name again? Mike something?
Uncle Spider?
Mike? I don't remember. I haven't watched
that
guy
is,
so
I mean, I hope he's not listening because he's huge, but that guy's a terrible actor.
I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and say that no.
No way. You're out of your mind. You need to see, like, current photos of him, like, sporting the suit. He was on Weeds, too, as the older, like, more, like, matured, you know, whatever, dude.
He's, like, 5'7". No.
Who cares?
You can't have a 5'7" Batman.
It's all about the gadgets.
Oh, my God.
You're nuts.
This is not Bugsy Malone.
You're nuts.
Boo.
Nuts.
Terrible pick.
Superman, go.
Kirk Douglas.
And my pick was terrible.
Kirk Douglas, Paths of Glory era. Come on, he would have been the best Superman of all time.
No.
Yes. Anybody listening who has seen Paths of Glory, just picture him in the cape for 5 seconds.
No.
And you're going to be like, nailed it. That is a perfect Superman.
No. Boo.
Yeah, you're just booing. All right, better yet, Kirk Douglas and Spartacus with that chest.
What?
He's got the chest of Superman, the big... Superman.
You're weird.
Trust me. Kirk Douglas is the guy. Kirk Douglas is the guy.
No.
Peter Fonda, maybe. Maybe Peter Fonda. I'm sticking with Kirk Douglas, though. Paths of Glory era. Not like now era, because he's like 97 now.
Whatever, dude. I think he'd be awesome.
He'd be a much better Jor-El than...
Whatever. You're nuts. Superman. It's kind of a super, like, low-hanging, duh pick, but Michael Fassbender.
I could see that.
He would, I mean, he could pretty much nail anything, but, yeah, he would make a really good Superman.
I could see that.
Nailed it.
Yes.
Go.
Well, next is Wonder Woman.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I forgot that you were going first. Yeah, no, go.
Well, next is Wonder Woman, and here's one. She's probably, unfortunately, by Hollywood standards, too old now, but I think even now she would probably be a good pick, and that's Catherine Zeta-Jones.
I could see that.
When I look at her photos, I'm like, how come no one ever mentioned her to be Wonder Woman? She's like she is Wonder Woman almost. I mean, she looks exactly like the character. It was almost as if her parents said, let's make Wonder Woman. And then they did.
Huh. Yeah, I could see that.
But no one that I know of ever mentioned, unless it was maybe in the early 2000s and they were talking about it. I know Rosario Dawson was mentioned.
Ooh.
I know Adrian Palicki.
I don't know who that is.
Some UFC girl. I don't remember. Doesn't matter.
All right, I don't remember who my initial pick for this was, but I changed it last minute to Carla Gugino.
I can see that. Again, she's
I know she's a little short.
She's a little too old now.
Whatever, dude.
But again, this is all time.
She's still like, I don't know. I think she's just underutilized. She should be in a lot more movies. She's an awesome actress.
I agree, and she's gorgeous. So that's
that too.
That helps for me.
Yeah.
All right.
Who do you have as Alfred?
Peter Sellers.
I can see it. I can't even argue it.
You can't. It's perfect. That is a perfect pick.
I feel like I went the Fassbender route where I just went super obvious and super easy, and like Ian McKellen.
For Alfred?
Yeah.
I could see that.
I mean, he's like the only old actor that never did it. You know what I'm saying? Outside of like Patrick Stewart.
Well, he got into the DC Marvel
he did.
Squabbling recently.
He so did.
Now it's too late.
But, you know, Ian McKellen, another fantastic actor who, you know, obviously...
Killed it on Extras.
Oh, absolutely
Sir
killed
Ian,
it.
Sir Ian, Sir Ian, cut.
Yeah.
You shall not pass.
I think, pretty sure that I'm going to kill your Lex Luthor with mine.
Well, I am picking the guy that was initially talked about, and he actually said... Give me a call. I'm interested. And that's Bryan Cranston.
Ooh. That's actually a lot
that's,
better than
that's
I
why
you'd...
people were so mad about Jesse Eisenberg because there were rumors going around that Bryan Cranston was top of the list for Lex Luthor. And everyone was like, do it, do it. And it was a lot of support for that pick. And a lot of people were like, oh, man, they get Cranston. You could forget it. Marvel's done, which is never going to happen. But still, of course, fanboys, you know, they know everything.
Just make fun of our whole audience.
I'm not making fun of our whole audience. Just
that's actually a better pick than I thought. And I give you credit for. I thought you were just going to suck on that one.
What do you think I was going to pick?
I have no idea.
Christopher Mintz Plasse.
Well, probably.
McLovin.
it's not too far off when you think about the Jesse Eisenberg pick, you know. But
I actually think Jesse Eisenberg was a decent pick.
Oh, I think he's going to nail it after seeing the trailers and some of that stuff. Actually, like, I think he's going to be a really good Lex Luthor. But initially, I'm like, that kid? But
initially, I was thinking they should have got Michael Cera instead.
As long as he had that mustache, he could do whatever he wants.
He'd be Senor Lex Luthor.
I totally need to watch the fourth season of that again now. Lex Luthor, are you ready?
Yep.
You seriously?
I'm ready.
Christoph Waltz.
Oh my god, yes. That would totally work.
You guys can't see this right now, but I'm totally flexing because that was a great answer.
Cranston and him could have boxed for it.
Cranston would have lost. That
he probably would have lost.
Christoph Waltz is...
Hans Landa would have knocked out Walter White all night long.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's... Man, they could make... You could do a spin-off Lex Luthor movie out of those.
Yeah.
What if they did, like, a Manhattan Project version where, like, one was the evil Lex Luthor and one was the even more evil Lex Luthor? That'd be awesome.
Oh, this is... kind of off topic, but not really. Apparently, there was an I don't know if it was an interview or somebody just asked him the random question, but somebody asked Neil deGrasse Tyson
if he wanted to be Lex Luthor.
No, who would win in a fight, Batman against Superman? And he clearly showed how Batman can easily beat Superman. I haven't read it yet, but just know that that is out there.
He's in the movie. I think he's just a voiceover, but he's in the movie.
He should be in every scene.
He should just be Superman.
He is the best.
He actually is the best.
I check his schedule from time to time to see if he's going to be doing any speaking in Chicago, because I'm going if he ever comes.
Oh, I'd totally see that.
No, I'm not telling you.
All right.
Anywho, there's one last casting, and that would be Aquaman.
Matthew McConaughey.
Hmm.
Did you hear him doing, all right, all right, all right, underwater?
That was weird.
It'd be better if he played his character from Dallas Buyers Club, the crazy crackhead homophobe underwater as Aquaman.
Huh. I feel like Aquaman's going to be too much of a background character.
He could be the Lincoln lawyer, except he pulls up in like a jet
on
ski.
On a seahorse?
Yeah, or on a seahorse.
I actually think, once again, I think my pick is way better. Sendil Ramamurthy.
What?
Yes, that's what I expected you to say. For any of you Heroes fans out there, and I don't mean Heroes Reborn, I mean the original Heroes on NBC back from, you know, in 2010 or whatever. He was Dr. Mohinder Suresh. He was...
The name, I remember that character vaguely.
Well, hint, hint, he was the Indian guy.
Well...
He's the one who went around and found everybody, and he's the one that narrated the beginning of every episode. Once I pictured him in my mind, like, I figured, like, dude, that would be just, like, perfect, I think.
I have to see him. It's been so long since I've seen the regular Heroes. And about four episodes into season two, I was like, I'm done with this show. This show's terrible now. And I never went back. And I didn't even... I think I only saw season one after the fact. Yeah, I saw it on DVD or something like that, so... I've heard good things about Heroes Reborn. I know my boss watches it. He's been telling me it's pretty good. And I think he liked all of it, or most of it.
Heroes Reborn is actually up on ReviewAndRoast.com with an episode-by-episode...
recap?
Yes, thank you.
There you go. Well, we can move on to the next topic if you'd like.
We can. This is a topic about Legos. Now, have they, like, never done Doctor Who Legos before?
This is a first.
For realsies?
Eh, maybe.
You'd have to see them in action.
Maybe.
I mean, it's no secret. I'm, like, huge Doctor Who fan. So, I mean, I'm all about anything they're going to do with that. So, I'll build a life-size Lego TARDIS right now.
Big time.
It would be big time. I'd probably sleep in it. Because it's going to be bigger on the inside. Go, do what?
I'd be curious to see how well it sells. Because I know Legos are the most profitable toy company on the planet right now or something like that.
Well, because they're way overpriced, let's face it. For what's essentially just a plastic block. And then, you know, they charge you $100 just because it's the Death Star. You know, it's like, come on. They're plastic blocks. They cost you 40 cents to make that whole thing. And now you're going to charge me a hundo for Lando. What?
Genius marketing.
Oh, dude, people will pay it. I'm dying to pay it myself. I just don't have an extra $100 laying around.
Nor the room. Anyway.
Anyway. All right, so the little deal with this one was we figured we'd think of three
properties.
Yeah, three licensed Lego sets that we would actually purchase ourselves. Again, for me, not in really any particular order. Because let's face it, I'll buy almost anything Lego if it looks neat. I did stay away from like the obvious Star Wars ones. And I did lump the my first selection, I did lump it into kind of a more broadened category. But that's anything Tolkien related, because I know they have Lord of the Hobbits, and then they have Lord of the Hobbits. Jesus, they have Lord of the Rings, you know, Legos. They have Hobbit Legos. I'm sure, you know, if they ever do a Silmarillion movie, they'll have those Legos on top. But I just figured, you know, put it all together, Tolkien Legos, nailed it. That's obvious, though. I think
that's a little obvious. My first pick is the shield.
What?
I figure a little Lego Vic Mackey, a little Lego Shane Vendrell, a little Lego Lem with, like, you know, removable. You could take the regular head off and put the scarred head off from the grenade. Some body parts laying around, some containers with some bodies in them. Not for kids, clearly. But if you can rebuild the barn, little David Aceveda with a cell phone, you know, from the video, if you remember that part.
I remember everything.
I'm just saying, like,
you're about to sell
it's me. Not going to sell well.
I didn't even think of going that route.
It's not going to sell well, but you'll sell one because I will save money for that. If I could build the barn and, you know, build the money train and, you know, some little Lego, you know, I can't remember. Like,
I'm going to change all mine now.
Hungarians? Who are the money train guys again? Slovakians? It's been a while since I watched The Shield, which is really stupid to me because it's my favorite.
Libyans.
The Libyans, yes.
The Libyans.
But yeah, The Shield, if you haven't watched it, best show in the history of TV. I don't care what anybody says. And if you made, even if you can have like a little box and you press the button and play the theme song, I'd be like, I wouldn't even go to work anymore. I'd just recreate that entire show from season one on with Legos.
I'm just going to keep going with my terrible list, even though I know mine are all going to suck now.
That was kind of my sarcastic-ish pick. Like, I would be into it, but I know they'd never.
Yeah, but I'm, like, sad about all my stupid picks now, so whatever.
This Pink Panther is pretty cool, huh?
Stupid Legos. I'm going the R.A. Salvatore D&D Legend of Driz series.
Interesting for two reasons. A, because that would be super fun and possibly limitless in terms of worlds and characters and monsters, etc.
But also
landscapes, yes. Yeah, I mean, you could incorporate so much of Forgotten Realms into that. And, like, it's weird because I don't know a ton of people that read those books, but I also know those books are super popular.
So, I read them.
Oh, you read them. But I'm like, I can name 20 people that read 50 Shades of Grey. I can't name 20 people that read Forgotten Realms.
You know 20 people? Oh, my God. You're like a celebrity.
I know the guy at the gas station. He reads 50 Shades of Grey. My pick is actually in the same semi-universe. I thought Magic the Gathering would be an interesting Lego set.
I didn't think about that either. But again, I would just build mine and they would smash yours, just like when we play the regular game.
Who says I don't play the Magic the Gathering game? That's for nerds.
Yeah. Yeah. And this nerd is the king of magic in this house.
And every woman listening said, well, done with this show.
No, they're all like, dude, I'm coming over to play Magic. And I'm like, you better bring your mana. You guys want to play Plastic Planeswalker? I mean, I'll be the first one to say I started playing in like 94, I think, when 4th edition came out first. So I've been playing for a long time, but I never progressed with all the stupid new rules. So I still play, I guess, what you can consider like the old school way. But whatever. The new rules are stupid. Nailed it.
You kids and your new rules and your right? hula hoops.
Yeah, this ain't Bill Maher, all right? No new rules.
Oh.
All right. Did you do number two?
Yeah, Magic the Gathering.
That's right, because you know, we were just talking about Magic.
Yep.
Nailed it. First one might sound a little weird at first, but again, if you're a longtime listener, you know that I am thoroughly into the story of Alice in Wonderland. You have all like the cool weird stuff, and you have the little like tea party set, and then you have like the tunnel where she's falling down. I don't know. They could do some really cool stuff Lego wise.
I agree.
You have a little Alice, and then you build a big Lego Alice.
A big bong for the Cheshire Cat.
It was actually for the caterpillar.
Whatever. Either way.
But yeah, I don't know. I always was into that original cartoon movie. So,
well, my third one is kind of broad and not necessarily so licensed. Sexist. I know. I thought if you did a giant set, like a humongous set of like say 2,500 blocks of various sizes with various looking textures like concrete and brick and so on and so forth, instead of having like a plan for a specific building or structure, you could download plans to build city centers that are already existing. So, like, say, for example, you wanted to build downtown. Let's say you wanted to build Navy Pier. You can go on and see if there's a Navy Pier building plan, and it'll tell you like what you would need, and then you can build Navy Pier. It'll give you like the basics how to do it, and you can add your own little whatever.
So like the architecture box, but with more textures.
Well, the architecture box is all white bricks. This could be like bricks and shrubbery, et cetera. Et cetera.
Oh, shrubbery!
Had to do that. But I know, I just think like if you did that and then had like a website where people can build structures that they're familiar with, say there's a famous mom-and-pop record store in their downtown area. They could build a little area around that and then upload the plans to the website, and then other people could download them.
People do that. You just go to the store and you buy random handfuls of bricks.
Right, I'm just saying, if they had...
You just want one big set with all random colors.
But I would want like little textures on it, like for brick and... I mean, you don't have to go totally crazy with it, but like, rather than just brown bricks, you have little, you know, patterns on them or something.
Meh. All right.
You could build downtown Tinley. Oh my God, there's tea hands.
Oh, that's so gross.
Somebody would be like, I'm buying that Lego set.
I feel like I need to take a break after that comment. Like, that was just bad.
There's Holsteins? Free pizza. It's even worse.
Actually, it's not, but... All right, so moving on to over under. When Brian's like, "Why don't you pick it this week?" I was like, "Oh my God, food!" Because you know, why wouldn't the fat guy pick food? You know. So types of food: overrated, underrated. My overrated pick, and it kind of, you know, I think it's totally overrated. A lot of people might not agree. Some people might. Sushi.
I've never had sushi. I can't argue for or against.
I'm not saying that it's bad, but it's nowhere near as good as people make it out to be, number one. And number two, I did a little research on sushi. It was invented as a cheap food for, you know, for people. Kind of like the Volkswagen Beetle back in the 60s was a cheap car for people. But they've turned it into this like expensive, like yuppie rich guy food. You know what I'm saying? Like, It's supposed to be a cheap meal, but they turned it into this super expensive yuppie thing. And it's really not that good. I mean, I don't know. It's cold raw fish, cold rice, cold seaweed. It's just gross. Not gross, but it's not that good. It's really not.
I've never had it. I don't know.
It's like okay once in a while, but I would never like run a mile for it.
Interesting.
Overrated.
My overrated pick, and I know there would be a massive outcry if there were people here at the moment, but that's okay because there's not, so I'll make it to the car and survive. Anything involving steak.
I'm fine with that.
But, I mean, the masses are pro-steak. The public has spoken. Steak,
no, I agree.
You know, it's what's for dinner.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I get a taste for steak like once in a great while, like once every 3 years. And then usually I'm satisfied and then I don't really care if I have it again. I very almost never crave it. And then when I do have it, I'd say 50% of the time I'm always underwhelmed.
See, here's my problem with, you know, steak. Coming from being vegetarian / vegan for like 10 years or whatever, and going back, you know, I feel like the people who are that into steak like to eat it while it's basically still breathing and bleeding all over the place. And that's just plain disgusting. I don't care how good you think it is, but like when I cut into a steak and it's like winks at me and goes, like, no, that's gross. That is absolutely wrong. And there I said my thing.
All right, well, yeah, I mean...
People using, like, the bread at the table to sop up the blood and... dude, that's gross. Pink steak is not good. It's gross. Gross.
Yeah, that's a sell me.
Nailed it. All right, moving on to underrated. It's going to be... It might not make sense at first... But I am going to stick with it, and I'll get to that in a minute. But Middle Eastern food, like hummus and falafel and, you know, stuff like that, I think is super good. And every now and then, the restaurant will pop up, and I'm like, yes, I could go and get some real falafel, not this, like, stupid naf-naf crap. I can get, like, you know, real hummus, real falafel, real baba ganoush, whatever. And then, you know, 2-3 months later, they close down because nobody goes there. I don't understand why. That is some of the most amazing food I've ever had in my life.
A lot of people like hummus.
They like the hummus you get at Jewel. That's not
right. They
hummus.
Like the Sabra hummus or like
not hummus.
It is. It's just not very authentic and it's not as good.
If you ever.
But here's, I think, another reason why. Well, you can finish your thought.
I was going to say, like, if you've ever driven past or you know of like. A Middle Eastern restaurant in your town where they make the hummus and it's like got the oil in it and it's got the couple of chickpeas and all the spices. Do yourself a favor and just pick up some. And if it was around here, I'd get it every day. Like, not lying.
Yeah, it's got to have the turmeric and the little green chilies and the, you know, the whole chickpeas in the middle and the oil in the, you know.
It's like a whole presentation. And it's delicious.
But it's so much better when you have it that way.
Especially
when you get like hot sliced pita bread and a significant amount of it to where you can eat pretty much all the hummus.
So good. It's unbelievable. No, and the last place we found around here was so good.
Oh,
so
yes.
Good. And then like they just closed down because I think me and Brian were the only people that ever went there.
Yeah, and you could go in there and be a total honky and get fries, too. You didn't have to have you know, Mediterranean food. You can be a total whitey and be like, okay, fries. Can I have French fries?
Let me get the chicken shawarma sandwich and some French fries.
Like, but I just want the chicken. I don't want the pita bread or any of the
Yeah, right. None of that spices crap. Like, yeah, the food is so, so good.
But I think another reason why, I think your average dumb suburbanite, they see Middle Eastern, and they automatically go, terrorism!
Yeah, I know, right?
They're going to put a bomb in my food.
Yeah. You just see this, like, basket with a falafel sandwich and an ICBM sticking out of it. You're like, what's that? It's garnish. Don't worry about it. Just eat it.
It's like the Roadrunner cartoons where they got the bomb with the wick just going down into your fries.
Like, even whatever, like this dude, guy used to work for. He was like, oh, I'll tell you right now, I like that shawarma stuff, but I don't trust those people. And I'm like, you're such an idiot. Good God.
Food is so good. So under an honorable mention to Indian food, really.
Oh, yeah.
Just because there is the place out here, and that's what I don't get. There's a place out here called the Taj Mahal. Every time I've tried to go there since the first time, it is so unbelievably packed, like I don't even bother anymore. But, I mean, that's good, I guess, but that's why I picked the Middle Eastern over the Indian, at least for this area.
Word. Mine. Anything involving kebabs. Chicken kebabs, shrimp kebabs.
Steak kebabs.
Even steak kebabs, yes, because if you grill chunks of steak with peppers and onions and yellow squash and so on, it's, oh, man, it's so good. Marinate that stuff a little bit with some, you know, vinegar and olive oil or something, or some
balsamic.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I like me some kebabs.
There's something about eating
food off a stick.
Grill. Well, yeah, but it's more about the fact when you put all those things together on a skewer and grill it over a flame, and all the juices kind of, you know, mixed together, and it's just, oh man, it's delicious.
No, I agree. That
you take all the oils and all the, you know, stuff you would fry it over a stove with. You take all that out and do it, you know, just man and fire, ugh, caveman style.
Nerd.
I'm saying that's the way to do it.
All right, and as always with everything we've talked about, feel free to tweet your responses. That's about time where you get ready to wrap this up. So we will give you our best things ever for the week, and we will get out of your hair. And I think we're possibly going to have the same thing, but I'm going Psychic Warfare, the new album by Clutch. That thing is so good. Firebirds is such a good song, and Sons of Virginia is an amazing song as well.
You're going to hate what I'm about to say, but right now, I'm not in agreement. This is my least favorite Clutch album in a while.
Oh, you're nuts.
I love the song. I love the song Psychic Warfare, the song after it.
You mean and X-Ray Vision?
X-Ray Vision. The song after that I like a lot.
Firebirds.
And then, what's that one about something, the Colossus?
I know what you're talking about. But
that song I love. But so far, this album has not grabbed me the way, like, the last album did.
I don't think you've listened to it, isn't it?
No, I can agree with that I haven't really listened to it yet, but from what I've heard, I'm like, I'm not blown away by it like I wanted to be.
Oh, dude, I'm in complete opposite. Like, the last couple of Clutch records, it took me a minute to get into them, but this one, like, almost immediately, I was like, dude, this is what I've been, like, this is Clutch, like, this just rules. Like, I am so into this record right now. And I'm not saying the last ones were bad, not by any means, but they didn't grab me as quickly as this one did. This one had the hook.
See, I don't know. I agree. X-Ray Vision's probably about as good an album opener as they've ever had. I just don't really feel, I'm not feeling this album yet. And there's going to probably come a point where I will, but right now I'm just like, eh.
We're going to do weekly updates on your feelings on the new Clutch until you come around.
Fine. Well, mine actually is
Quit Death in Texas. Sucker for the Witch. Dude! You don't even know what you're talking about right now. Sorry.
Perhaps. My pick is, Seeing Ghost last weekend.
Yeah, I didn't want to go with that 2 weeks in a row, but that was by far still awesome.
I've listened to Meliora every single day since that concert, and I'm like, this is the only thing that's keeping me from crying because I want to be at that show again.
Dude, I don't care. I don't care. If they're, from now on, if they're even within an hour or two or a day.
If they're within an hour of me, 40 minutes tops, I will totally go.
I don't care, dude. If I got to, I mean, whatever, dude. I don't even care if I know that they're close enough for me to drive to in a day. Like, I might have to just go to the next ritual.
I agree. I am fully in agreement.
I wish I could have seen him in whatever town that is with the Westboro Baptist Church.
It was Wichita, I think. Or Topeka, one of the two. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Although I did Google it, and I don't think anything happened. I don't think they even were aware that Ghost came through.
Probably not enough high-profile news coverage for something like that.
Yeah, right.
It'd have to be something super obnoxious, like a soldier's funeral, so they can, you know, get on TV and have people throw rocks at them.
Yeah,
which,
right.
Which, you know, you do something that ignorant, you're pretty much asking for rocks to
yeah,
be thrown
yeah,
at
them. Yeah, yeah, like, I don't even want to get into it right now, because I'll just ramble for an hour like a lunatic, but that will wrap us up. Is it your pick, or do you know what you're picking for next week, so we can tell everybody, or are we just going to keep everybody in the dark?
I have a couple thoughts, but I'm not sure yet.
You're all going to be left in the dark, is what he's saying.
But we can tease the next two movie roasts, which are coming later this week.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, we can. We can. First one will be my pick and my long time wanting to have seen, but I'm finally going to watch. Christopher Lee's The Mad Monk. Don't know if it's going to be any good. I hope it was better than The House That Dripped Blood. But we will see. If you want to know more about that movie, we have last week's episode was that and the Ghost concert. But I also have a review up on reviewandroast.com of The House That Dripped Blood if you'd like to know more. And after that, we are doing American Mary. That'll be Wednesday and Friday, respectively, of this week. So stay tuned.
And American Mary is a more contemporary horror movie.
Yeah, it's from 2012. But we'll get to that on Friday. Anywho, that's our show for this week, and we will see you next week.
You are now leaving the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.